Looking at pop culture, for better or for worse, is always, you can always get a read on what people are into by looking at pop culture. That's why it's popular culture. And I've been noticing two things at least, or maybe it's the algorithm of things that I watch, but I've been noticing that whether it's TV or movies, like the shows seem to be getting darker. Do you know what I mean? That like, whether it's like these medical shows, whether it's the new Batman series, whether it's Stranger Things, people are drawn to the fact that the world is more dark and complicated than we thought. And that really the human heart is darker than we thought. And I think you're starting to see a lot of kind of movies and TV shows kind of start recognizing that reality. But at the same time, those shows tend to have some kind of hero or group of heroes that instead of running away from whatever's going on in the dark culture, kind of diving in, and that could be doctors, right? That could be Batman himself. That could be these kids in Stranger Things. But what's beginning to happen in our pop culture is, okay, we recognize there is this pervasive darkness in the world, and that we need someone or something to fix this. And honestly, that is like the message of Judges. Like if you read through Judges, it is disturbing because it shows how dark the human heart is. Like it is messy, it is rebellious. And what God keeps doing is like a fireman or like a medical professional or somebody, instead of running away from the mess, he keeps diving in and relentlessly saving people by raising up these judges again and again and again. And so you've been watching that from Melvin and Clint, and I think Ron taught one time, and we get to chapter 9, and chapter 9 is actually unique because chapter 9 is this guy named Abimelech. And what you see is instead of God diving in to deliver the people from this dark place, this is what makes chapter 9 unique. God in his wisdom just kind of pulls back and allows the rebellion to go on unchecked for a little bit. And it shows you how dark the human heart can be. Which means Judges 9 is kind of a window into our own hearts. And so chapter 9, this is what makes it unique. God kind of recedes into the background. Of course he's at work, we know that. And you see Abimelech, who's not a judge, he's the anti-judge. He's the opposite of all these other judges. Like God keeps raising up these people to deliver, these judges to deliver the people. Yes, there's some messiness about these judges, but they are God-appointed leaders that save the people. And Abimelech is unique. He's the anti-judge. And I would say what Abimelech is, and here's your kind of paradigm. Abimelech is what it looks like instead of you to depend on God to deliver you. Abimelech is a picture of what it looks like to try to save yourself, to refuse to be dependent on God, to refuse to be weak and take everything in your own hands. That's what Abimelech is. That's why he's an anti-judge. He's the opposite. Okay, so let me read a little bit. It is a long chapter, so let me start in 8. I'm actually going to start in 8:29 because this is kind of Abimelech's origin story, and I'll go till 9:6, and then we'll kind of make some comments. Here we go. Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, that's his other name, okay? The son of Joash went and lived in his own house. Now Gideon had 70 sons, his own offspring, for he had many wives, and his concubine who was in Shechem also bore him a son, and he called his name Abimelech. There he is. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, at Ophrah of the Abiezrites. As soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baals and made Baal-berith their god. And the people of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hand of all their enemies on every side. They did not show steadfast love to the family of Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, in return for all the good that he had done to Israel. Now Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's family, say in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal rule over you, or that one rule over you? Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows who followed him. And he went to his father's house at Ophrah and killed his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, the 70 men on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest of the son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the leaders of Shechem came together, and all Beth Millo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem.
All right.
So this is the arrival of this anti-judge, the opposite of the other judges, Abimelech. You see at the end of Gideon's life, or his other name is Jerubbaal, he has many wives, and he has a concubine. Again, if you follow what happens in the story, the Hebrew narrative is letting you know that polygamy and concubines are never God's design. Watch the Hebrew narrative. Whenever there's polygamy, it always leads to disaster. It always leads to dysfunction. So, yes, without explicitly telling you that this is sinful, Hebrew narrative always shows you that polygamy leads to disaster. It's never been part of God's design. You're going to see the disaster in chapter 9. Gideon dies. It tells you this guy named Abimelech is born in Shechem to Gideon's concubine. Gideon dies, and the people go back and they worship other gods. And then you see Abimelech's kind of rise to power. He thinks or realizes that probably the next leader will come from Gideon's family lineage. That happened a lot. He knows that Gideon has 70 sons, and he knows that those sons are his half-brothers. And he basically goes back to his mom and his mom's people and says, look, this is going to be a mess if 70 people try to rule over us. Why don't you pick me as your biological kinsman? Wouldn't you rather me rule over you than all these 70 other people? And he persuades his mom and his relatives and all of Shechem to throw their support behind him. And he hires this worthless and reckless fellows with the money they give him. And they go and they murder 69 of Gideon's 70 sons. Everyone is murdered except for the youngest who gets away. And that is how Abimelech becomes their leader, their king. And I'm suggesting he really is an anti-judge because he is a picture of what it looks like to not be raised up by the Lord, but to take things into your own hands. Okay, so here's kind of the first question. And this takes a little bit of you knowing some of the background of Judges, you being in here and listening. If not, that's okay. But even reading about Abimelech's, how he kind of rose to power, how can you, like, what's the difference between him and the other judges? Why am I telling you he's an anti-judge? Like, what's there and what's not there that's signaling to the reader this is different than the rest of the judges? Anybody? Yes, the first one is really obvious, especially if you read it through all in one sitting. Every other judge tells you it's been chosen by God. And actually, the Spirit of God rushes upon this judge. Abimelech, actually, this is one of the haunting things about chapter 9. There is no mention of Yahweh in chapter 9 until the very end, when it's basically about judgment. And so Abimelech is not chosen by God. There is no Spirit of God that rushes upon him. Actually, what you'll see if you keep reading is an evil spirit rushes upon him. Good. So he's not chosen by God. He is basically self-appointed. I'm going to be your leader. Good. Anything else stick out to you? What did the other judges do? Who did the other judges save Israel from? They save Israel from their oppressors, right? Their enemies. Well, Abimelech starts killing not Israel's enemies, but their own people. Like he kills their kinsmen. This is not the oppressive enemies that they're crying out for deliverance from. Abimelech, not appointed by God, spirit of God does not rush upon him. Instead, you're going to see it's a evil spirit. And he turns and destroys his own people, his own kinsmen. So he actually isn't delivering them at all. So instead of weakness and dependence on the Lord, he just assumes he should be king. He manipulates it to happen. And then he destroys his own people. And actually, by the end of chapter 9, you'll realize no deliverance has happened. Actually, just tremendous amount of loss of life and destruction. He's the complete opposite. And so by the end of every other judge, you at least hear that God brings rest to the land through these judges. Now, it might be for a small period of time, but at least brings rest. At the end of chapter 9, no rest is brought to the land. Instead, it just gets polluted with innocent blood. So Abimelech, in every way, is the opposite of these judges that God raises up to be, yes, imperfect, but still salvation figures that bring salvation to Israel. But Abimelech, not appointed by God, does not live in weakness and dependence on the Lord. Actually, even Gideon, in all of his mess, at the end, when they try to make Gideon king, he says, no. I'm not going to be your king. God is your king. He refuses to kind of grab that power. And now Abimelech right after him says, I'll be your king. I'll make it happen. And he literally takes power. So I would suggest that what Abimelech shows us is a window into our own heart. Right? The judges at their best show us a window into God and what he's like. That he relentlessly saves us and relentlessly delivers us from our enemies. Abimelech is this window into our hearts and what it looks like for us to not depend on the Lord, but to say, I've got this. I can do this. I can control this. I can kind of save myself. You might not use those words, but this is Abimelech trying to function independently of God. And it's a disaster. So let me read verse 22 through 49. This will give you the kind of big picture of Abimelech. So what we're skipping over is Jotham, this younger son that escapes. He stands on this mountain and he basically pronounces a curse and he tells a parable. And that parable basically tells you what's going to happen in the rest of the chapter. Okay. And so here's verse 22. Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years. And God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, and the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops, and they robbed all who passed by them along that way, and it was told to Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and tried them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? Is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him? Would that this people were under my hand, then I would remove Abimelech. I'd say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out." Okay, so this guy named Gaal shows up to Shechem and says, "Why are we serving this guy Abimelech? Why have we let him be king? If you'll make me king, we'll get rid of this guy." And remember, you just got told that the sins of Abimelech and Shechem are about to fall back on them. So now you're watching someone do the same thing that Abimelech did. He's basically saying, "Why are you letting him be king? Why don't you make me king?" All right. So when Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled. And he sent messengers to Abimelech, secretly saying, "Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they're stirring up the city against you. Now therefore, go by night, and you and the people who are with you, and set an ambush in the field. Then the early morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do. So Zebul goes and warns Abimelech that this guy named Gaal is going to try to take your power. And so he says, you need to come ambush Gaal. All right. And so Abimelech and all the men who were with him rose up by night and set an ambush against Shechem in four companies. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city, and Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from the ambush. When Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, look, people are coming down from the mountains. And Zebul said to him, you mistake the shadow of the mountains for men. Gaal spoke again and said, look, people are coming down from the center of the land, and one company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak. Then Zebul said to him, where's your mouth now, you who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despise? Go out now and fight with them. And Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him. Many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. And Abimelech lived at Uramah, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives, so they could not dwell at Shechem. All right, so he comes. He defeats this Gaal guy who rises up against him. Now, again, this is Shechem, okay? These are the people that Abimelech said, I'll be your king. I'll be your protector. The following day, the people of Shechem that he said that he would protect went out into the field, and Abimelech was told, and he took his people and divided them into three companies and set an ambush in the fields. He looked and saw the people coming out of the city, so he rose against them and killed them. Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city while the two companies rushed upon who were in the field and killed them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He captured the city and killed the people who were in it, and he razed the city and sowed it with salt. When all the leaders of the tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Bereth. Abimelech was told that all the leaders of the tower of Shechem were gathered together, and Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon. He and all the people were with him, and Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bundle of brushwood, took it up and laid it on his shoulder. He said to the men who were with him, what you have seen me do, hurry and do as I have done. So every one of the people cut down his bundle, and following Abimelech, put it against the stronghold. They set the stronghold on fire over them so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. So this is the disaster that Abimelech brings. This is the people of Shechem, all right? So another guy comes in and basically tries to do what Abimelech does, says, hey, make me king. They defeat him. And then the next day when the people of Shechem are outside the city doing their normal agricultural work, Abimelech ambushes them, kills most of them. The rest of the town runs into a tower, and Abimelech then gathers people. They go gather wood, and they set the tower on fire and kill the rest of the town. That is Abimelech's kind of reign as their king, that he ends up destroying the whole town with fire. And so Abimelech, again, is this picture of someone who is not depending on the Lord to save, is refusing to live in weakness, refusing to wait for the Lord, and takes it into his own hands. Abimelech is a control freak, okay? And therefore exposes what I would say is what all of our hearts do. Here's what I want you to hear. When we believe the lie that the only person that looks out for me is me. If I believe that the only person that looks out for me is me, and I don't believe the Lord of this universe looks out for me, I don't believe that his people look out for me, then I'm always going to take things into my own hands. And when I take things into my own hands, this is what Abimelech shows us, it always leads to disaster. It always leads to death. I really think Judges 9 invites us to see that Abimelech is in all of us. That if we do not believe that the Lord of this universe is in control of all things and looks out for us, you have to know that someone's in control. And so you'll take it into your own hands. And it is disaster. Because the principle is this, everybody is driven by something controlling their life. And you're always going to run into things in your life that makes life feel out of control. And the question is, will I trust that the Lord of this universe looks out for me? or will I try to take it into my own hands? And Abimelech is this vivid picture of what happens when we try to take it into our own hands. Why do we lie? Why do we exaggerate the truth? Why do we manipulate stories and information? It's a way of trying to control an outcome. It's a way of trying to control what people think of you. If you feel captive to your kind of schedule or your to-do list, that in and of itself isn't bad, but it can become a slavery because I think I have to control my schedule to control the outcome of my life. There's all these subtle ways that we functionally live like the only person that's going to look out for me is me, and I just have to have my hands on it. I mean, if you really, like, there's an old story from Martin Luther's protege, Martin Luther worried all the time. He could be paralyzed by anxiety, and his protege looked at him finally one time and said, "Martin, you just need to get out of God's chair." And what he was saying is so much of your worry in life is you think you're in charge. You think you're in control. And that's God's seat. And if you'll get out of God's seat, you're now at the place of weakness. You're now at the place of dependence, which is the place of reality, which is the place of where we're going to depend on God to do this. I'm not going to manipulate. I'm not going to take things into my hands. So here's the sign. Abimelech in us, okay, is always revealed, you ready, by when we live by fear and when we live by faithlessness. And that's what you see in Abimelech. Abimelech is, from the beginning, he's afraid. He's afraid he's going to be forgotten. He's the child of the concubine. He's afraid he's not going to have any power. And so what does he start doing? He just starts manipulating things. He starts trying to control things so he can get power, so he can stay in control. Fear is what always comes out of a life that is trying to stay in control, that is trying to save itself, which is why Paul in Romans is saying that it's the Spirit of God that enables you to cry out, "Abba, Father," that casts out the spirit of fear. Those two things cannot run together. I'm either living, of course we have sin in us, so those things are running in our heart at the same time, but they are opposites. I'm either going to live as a child of God, entrusting myself to my Father's care, or I'm going to have a spirit of fear that's kind of living like an orphan, like I got to take this into my own hands. And Abimelech, true story, but it's this incredibly vivid picture that if you try to take it in your own hands, it'll always lead to destruction. It'll always lead to more fear. You'll actually never have your hands around it. Or you can live, like the rest of Judges is calling you to do it, live depending on the one that God raises up. Live dependent on the one that has the Spirit of God who will deliver you, who ultimately is Jesus. I'm either going to try to save myself, or I'm in weakness. This is John Stone's sermon. If you weren't in the early service, he is going to say, you either depend on Jesus to save you, which means you embrace you're a sinner, or basically you're going to try to do it yourself, and it always leads to a mess. And Abimelech is this vivid picture of that. It's already 10:30. Let me read for you hear scripture. Let me read for you how Abimelech's life ends, okay? This is verse 50. And Abimelech went to Thebez and encamped against Thebez and captured it. But there was a strong tower within the city, and all the men and women and all the leaders of the city fled to it and shut themselves in. They went up to the roof of the tower, and Abimelech came to the tower and fought against it and drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman threw an upper millstone in Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Then he called quickly to the young man, his arm bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest they say of me a woman killed him." His young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw Abimelech was dead, everyone departed his home. Thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return upon their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jeroboam. So again, there's no reason for him to attack Thebes. Again, Abimelech is just, I have to control everything. He lives by fear. So here's this other town. I guess I better go conquer them as well. They go up into a tower. He says, I'm going to do the same thing I did at Shechem. He gets ready to burn it, and a woman throws a millstone from the top. It lands on Abimelech. It is about to kill him. Look, he's still trying to control it. He's still trying to say, I cannot die in the shame. I can't say a woman killed me. And he gets his servant to run him through. So you see, even at the end of his life, he's still trying to desperately control his image. He's still trying to control everything. And so ultimately, he gets run through. Do you know another character that does that? Do you know another character that gets asked for his servant to run him through rather than him die a shameful death? Saul. This is part of what Judges is telling you, is that Saul, this is leading you to this, is not a good king. Saul is not like David. Saul is not like Jesus. Abimelech is actually is foreshadowing that. And so you get this picture, and this is how it'll end. It's interesting, in Judges, this is the second person that has been crushed by a woman, the second skull that's been crushed by a woman. Don't forget, in the background of Judges, you have this promise that God is going to crush the head of the serpent through the seed of the woman. You've seen a woman now twice crush the head of Israel's enemies. It's awesome. Again, it's showing you God is still going to destroy evil. But of course, he's going to do it through the real judge, Jesus, who's the complete opposite of Abimelech. Jesus doesn't grab power. Jesus doesn't try to control and manipulate everything. Jesus lives his life pouring himself out for others. Jesus is taken by oppressors and goes on a cross and is crushed, right? Isaiah says he was crushed for our iniquities. He doesn't get crushed for his sin. He gets crushed for ours, so that you can actually trust him. So you can say, I don't have to save myself. I don't have to control every aspect of my life. I can trust the one who came and was crushed for me. And so Jesus is the opposite of Abimelech in every single way. He defeats your enemies by being crushed in your place so that you can be brought in and be a child of God and cry out, Abba, Father, instead of live by the spirit of fear. Any kind of final thoughts, questions? It's also setting you up to see, to not trust Saul as the king. Saul's going to have a lot of the same attributes as Abimelech. But anything else? That's right. Yeah, the whole thing, God is giving Abimelech and the people over to what they want, which is independence from him. And it is disaster. Yeah, they follow him and they get it too. So thanks. All right, kids are coming in. Let me pray. Father, thank you for Judges. Forgive us for the Abimelech in our heart and enable us to cry out, Abba, Father, and trust you through Jesus. Amen.